I'm Laura Murphy-Oates, and this is The Full Story.
Stop denying the earth is dying. Stop denying the earth is dying.
In recent years, we've seen a growing number of teenagers and children from around the world protesting about climate change and demanding action from governments that they believe are not looking out for their future.
Yeah. This should have been done by world leaders and people in power. They should have chose our future over money.
This week, a class action case against the Australian government is headed to the federal court.
We're filing for an injunction to stop the federal environment minister from being able to approve this Vickery coal mine.
It's brought by 8 teenagers and a nun, and they're hoping to set a precedent that would stop the Australian government from approving new fossil fuel projects altogether.
So it's just about this one project, but it could create precedent that can stop future coal projects, which is really cool.
Today, the teenagers taking the government to court over climate change. It's Tuesday, the 2nd of March. Hello. Hey, ooh, I can't hear you.
It's because I was on mute. Can you hear me now?
Yes, I can.
Okay.
Anjali Sharma is a climate activist.
Mm-hmm.
If you want to press record.
Yeah, okay, recording.
And the lead applicant in this case.
So I'm Anjali Sharma. I'm 16 years old. I was born in India but moved to Melbourne when I was 10 months old. I'm currently in year 11, and outside of school, I'm really, really passionate in, environmental issues, social justice as a whole. And, I just have a passion to see social justice achieved.
Do you remember the first time you heard about climate change or when you started to really get interested?
Yeah, so it's always kind of been around my family, I guess. I have, like I said, I was born in India. So I have people I know back home who their main source of income is farming. They live on a farm and they rely on it for their income, for their food. It's basically their livelihood. Mm. And in India, the problem with farming has been that the monsoon season has started. It's been coming later. It's been growing shorter. It's been weaker. This is happening because of human activity. And being in Australia, I think I have I can do something about it because I have so much more privilege here than I would if I was an activist in India. And so I really like to use my platform that I've been given by moving here.
I wonder if you remember when you made that link. Was it a conversation with parents? Was it that it came up in school? You were looking on the internet? Do you know?
Yeah, it was a school thing, definitely. You go through primary school and you learn about sustainability. You know, you learn about there's fires happening and, you've got to throw away your rubbish in the recycling bin. And you learn all these tiny little things about sustainability and you don't actually ever connect the dots until, you get to a certain age. And that's when you're like, wait, it all works together. Like all of this is human activity.
Do you remember how old you were when you really started thinking about this?
Yeah, I'd say roughly 12, 13, start of high school.
Mm.
I remember initially I was angry, but mainly I was so scared. Like I remember when I actually really wanted to know what climate change is, I watched a series of YouTube videos and I took notes on them and I learned about the difference between 1 degree of warming past prehistoric levels compared to 2 degrees of warming and how we were heading for catastrophic levels of warming. And I just I genuinely didn't understand it. I was like, well, if there's such an obvious problem, why are we ignoring it? And that's when I kind of realized that the reason we're ignoring it is because we're prioritizing economic benefit always and playing it safe economically, I guess. You know, you don't want to invest in renewables because we already have such in the Australian government's eyes, a thriving coal industry and gas industry.
As you started learning about this, what kind of scared you the most? You said you were scared. What was it?
I remember watching a video. I learned about the tipping point and about how I think the video said something we had 8 years until we reached a point where we set off a series of irreversible chain reactions from which there is no coming back from. And I think, the video said 8 years. And I remember at one point I was waking up every day and being like, oh my God, 8 years, 8 years, we're one day closer. I just had this huge sense of climate anxiety that if we haven't addressed this for so long, it's not like climate change is a new issue out of the blue. what confidence can I have that it's going to be addressed before those 8 years is up? And I'm still going to be alive. Like, I'm going to have most of my like life left to live after those 8 years. And how am I going to be able to do that?
How did you start getting involved in the first place? I mean, when you're 13, what do you do?
Typical teenager, I started an Instagram account, an activist Instagram account. It was called Not Just a Conspiracy Theory.
That's a good name.
Yeah, thank you. And it got 12,000 followers at one point. Yeah, that's when I made it like a niche, like climate activism.
What were you posting on it at the time?
I would post like informational content, you know, about like why mining is bad. I'd post like news articles about, indigenous towns that have been destroyed by fracking, things that have been going around the world, like bushfire seasons and how that relates to climate change and stuff like that. Mm. And then through that, I found School Strike for Climate.
My name is Greta Thunberg. I am a Swedish climate activist.
Tell me about this, the School Strike for Climate.
So when school started, I decided that this was enough. I sat myself down on the ground outside the Swedish Parliament. I school strike for the climate.
So School Strike for Climate is a network of young people under 18 who are, you know, just like me, anxious about the future, angry about the inaction of our government. I got in contact with them and I was like, I'd really love to get involved. I'd love to help out. And that's how I ended up joining the School Strike Melbourne team.
If a few children can get headlines all over the world just by not going to school for a few weeks, imagine what we could all do together if you wanted to.
Since then, I have been helping organise the strikes. And, you know, we do other activism as well. Like, we don't just strike. We organised last year a bushfire vigil to raise money for fire-affected communities. We run, like, online training programs and stuff. And since then, I've really put all the anger and all, like, the confusion I had at a young age where I was like, why is this happening? Why is no one taking action on this when it's so obvious? I've put all of that into, like, activism and I found an avenue to like direct my anger to into making sustainable change.
We are on the outskirts of the biggest catastrophe humanity has ever faced and our government is doing nothing!
Traffic came to a halt as the younger generation made their voices heard.
Some of these protests have been pretty big in Australia. What's the biggest one that you've organised or been to?
Oh, I'm really proud to say that I was part of the team that organised September 20th in Melbourne. Mm. We got, I think, around 200,000 people onto the streets of the CBD of Melbourne. It was absolutely insane. I've never felt like a sense of like energy as I did that day. There were so many people. I remember we had scheduled our march to be between 3 and 4, and I was right at the back of the march, and I remember we didn't even get moving until like 4:15 because it was just so many people to get out onto the street, and just the energy, like people were chanting, people were yelling, people were banging drums, and that just like, it just showed me how many people actually care, even though our government doesn't.
Tell me about going to court.
Our first date of trial is Tuesday, the 2nd of March. And the trial goes from Tuesday to Friday, and then possibly there'll be an extra day next Friday. And yeah, everything's finally coming together. This is the final step, I guess.
Yeah, I'm recording. We're good to go.
Adam Morton is the environment editor at Guardian Australia.
I will warn you that I have a cold, so hopefully, you know, I won't snuffle too much.
So, Adam, I have been speaking to Ange, who's a 16-year-old from Melbourne, about how she became a climate activist and got so involved in this movement. You've been covering her legal case. Can you tell me, how did she end up taking the federal government to court?
Well, actually, it's not just her that is taking this action. She's one of a group of 8 kids. She's the face of the case. She's leading it. But there's 8 teenagers involved, and they're all involved and got to know each other through the school strike for climate movement. And it's not just kids. There's adults involved as well, including some pretty high-powered lawyers.
We have some really amazing barristers and lawyers, and they are the ones who developed this case theory. One of our barristers, I'm pretty sure, worked on a case against the Adani mine in Queensland, which unfortunately wasn't successful. Mm-hmm. But, you know, they've all had experience in this field and they've been working on this case theory for a long time now.
One of them is David Barnden, who's the principal lawyer at Equity Generation Lawyers.
They approached us, like our network, to see if there was any young people who would be interested in leading this class action. And that's how we all got involved.
There's also an 86-year-old involved. Now, a federal court case such as this can't be brought by a teenager or teenagers alone, so they need a litigation guardian. And the guardian in this case is Sister Bridget Arthur, a nun who has a long history of social action from a Christian perspective, including working on behalf of refugees and increasingly taking interest in climate change and the need to act there. So basically it's 8 teenagers and a nun who are bringing the case.
Why these kids specifically?
They were selected because of their interest, their action in which they'd already taken on climate change.
We have like regional rural strikers from WA who have seen like the firsthand impact that fracking has had. We have strikers who have direct experience with this, and like we bring kind of like a humane aspect to the case, I guess.
A lot of them have done a lot of work within their own communities already.
OSG, I'm directing you, your father, to cease your actions, reach our preventing police from reopening this closed road. This road was temporarily closed in accordance with the Road Transport Act.
The one that people may have seen before is probably Izzy Raj Seppings, who in late 2019 was threatened with arrest by the police during a climate rally outside Kirribilli House.
You need to leave now. Are you going to leave for me?
Yes.
Excellent, thank you. So you've got to leave, take your daughter?
Yeah, we'll go now.
Thanks very much. 500 metres, sir.
Okay.
Thank you.
That direction?
That direction.
Okay. I mean, I remember that photo during the bushfire season. It was just such an iconic image of a kid in the middle of this crisis seeming to stand up against some of the bigger forces at play there.
Yeah, look, it really became a motivating image.
That photo lives in my mind rent-free. Like, she is, you know, there's not many people that you can say, like, oh, I'm suing the environment minister with them. It's a pretty big thing to do. I'm just really, really privileged to work with them.
Next, how this case and many others could force governments to change their approach to fossil fuels. Hey, Laura Murphy Yotes here. Just a quick message for any new listeners to Full Story. If you like what you hear, you should subscribe. You can find us by searching for Full Story on Spotify, Apple, Google, or wherever you listen to podcasts. Thanks. Can you explain this case a little bit more? What are they actually arguing and how is it going to play out?
All right, I'll do my best. So it's a class action. So it's not just these 8 teens. They are bringing this action on behalf of young people, not just in Australia, but everywhere. That's the argument. Mm. And it's in relation to the proposed expansion of a coal mine in northwest New South Wales. This is the Vickery Coal Mine, which is owned by Whitehaven Coal.
Mm. And what is it about this coal mine? What do we need to know about it?
Well, it's an existing coal mine that the company has been wanting to extend, and these plans go back some years. It was originally approved, the extension, in 2014 at a certain level. That was at that stage going to extract 135 million tonnes of coal over the next 3 decades. But Whitehaven decided they wanted to be a bigger project. They wanted to expand it. They put in a new application. And now the extension of the mine would allow for 10 million tonnes of coal to be dug up each year, which is a 250% increase on the original proposal. So they've massively expanded it.
Wow.
Yeah. So it's a really significant project. and that has gone through the approval processes in New South Wales. It's been approved by the Independent Planning Commission. And it's now sitting before the Federal Environment Minister, Susan Lee, who has to make a decision under National Environment Law. This is the Environment Protection and Biodiversity Conservation Act.
Otherwise known as EPBC, which we've talked about before.
That's right, once or twice. So what this case is trying to do is injunct the minister from allowing that mine extension to go ahead.
Mm. Okay, before we go into that injunction process and what that would involve, can you just tell me a little bit more about this mine and the extension? What kind of impact would this have on the environment if this was given the rubber stamp by the federal environment minister?
Well, it would significantly increase greenhouse gas emissions. The commission in New South Wales, when they were looking at this project, found that it would increase emissions by 100 million tonnes over the life of the mine, which would make the emissions from the full mine over the rest of its life 366 million tonnes.
Wow.
That's a big number, which probably doesn't mean a lot to a lot of people, but to try and put that into some context, it's about two-thirds of what Australia emits in total in 1 year.
The whole of Australia in emissions.
The whole of Australia in 1 year, that's two-thirds of 1 year of Australia's emissions. To break that down a little bit further, it's equivalent to 1 year of all of the emissions from Australia's electricity generation, which is largely still from coal, and all of Australia's big industry put together, roughly speaking. Mm. So it's a huge amount, and obviously comes at a time in which we're increasingly hearing about the need to cut emissions incredibly rapidly over the next decade if we're going to live up to the goals of the Paris Climate Agreement.
So this case is asking for an injunction on the minister's decision. I mean, what is an injunction and what is their argument that the minister should do this?
Well, an injunction would prevent the minister making an approval decision. It would basically, she would be legally blocked by a court judgment from allowing the mine extension to go ahead.
Mm.
It's a complicated thing. It's not a challenge that is being made under existing national environment law.
Hmm.
They're not saying that under the law as it's written, it would be wrong for the minister to approve this extension. Rather that it's making a case that the minister has a common law duty of care to young people and their future, and based on that, she cannot legally approve actions that would make climate change worse.
Our argument basically is that the minister owes us as young people, as people who will have to live with her decision right now, she owes us a duty of care. And by approving this coal mine, it'll violate her duty of care essentially.
Because worsening climate change will have a direct and material impact on young people in the decades ahead.
We're at a point where we can't just let this keep happening. Like, the world has already warmed to, I think it's 1.2 degrees past prehistoric levels. And if we want to cap warming at a still safe level for us to live at, then we can't keep approving coal mines. We can't keep digging up coal.
And if the court did agree with the kids that the minister has a duty of care, what could that mean, both for this mine and for environmental planning in general?
Well, if the courts agrees for this mine, then clearly the extension would not go ahead.
Mm.
And it would potentially have significant ramifications for future decisions.
How will this have ramifications? What will this mean?
Well, it's possible that it could set a precedent that if it finds that ministers, that governments have a duty of care to the young when they are considering and potentially approving new fossil fuel projects.
Mm.
So the idea is that we could move increasingly towards that position where any new substantial fossil fuel development clearly invokes a significant risk for the young and for people of the future. And if it's legally shown that governments have a duty of care, well, you know, that can flow through.
Mm. So at the very least, this idea of a duty of care for young people will be or could be kind of solidified in law. It could become something that we increasingly think about and rely on.
I guess what I'd say is I think it's something we're going to hear a lot more about. I think we're going to see more cases brought on this issue, whatever the result here. And it's going to be something that is going to be on the legal and therefore the political agenda in the years to come.
How strong is this case legally, do we know? Is it likely to succeed?
It's a novel case, and novel cases by definition are challenging to win. There has been some independent legal opinion given after this case was brought that suggests that it will be tough for them to win this case, or at least it's like, you know, it might be a hard case to make.
Mm.
But we have serious people involved in bringing it to the court, including a leading QC who will be making the argument, working pro bono. These people aren't doing this because they think that it has no chance. They argue they have a strong case and believe they have a good chance of winning. Whatever the result in this case, there are, and lawyers say there are, increasingly a number of avenues under different laws, legal paths that can be pursued and are being pursued.
Like what?
The lawyers involved in Ange's case are themselves involved in running other cases. They're working on one in particular with a young Melbourne law student. Her name's Cater O'Donnell. She's filed a class action against the federal government. It's about climate change risk and Australians' super investments. And that's at its early stages, but it could have really significant ramifications if they were successful about what the government has to disclose about the risk of investments in fossil fuels, which would be a big shift if that were to happen. And we're seeing other cases being filed around the world, some of them more successful than others, and many of them involving young people, where this action is coming from people like Ange from across the planet.
So it sounds like Ange's case is kind of part of a movement and a bit of a global strategy.
Yeah, I mean, it's not necessarily a coordinated strategy, but there's definitely a big global push on to try to use courts and the law to do what, in many cases, activists believe governments are not doing to try and stem the rise of emissions and the impact of climate change. Some lawyers compare it to the rise of legal cases against big tobacco as the health impacts of smoking became increasingly clear. And I think the likelihood is we're going to see more and more of this.
I think with some people my age, there is a bit of a tendency to feel hopeless. I mean, I feel hopeless a lot of the time when you look at big corporations and governments that for decades have done nothing or pretended to do something and then not really followed through. Do you feel hopeless?
I definitely have some days. That's what got me into activism, just that feeling of hopelessness, that feeling of fear, of anxiety. But I think what really, you know, what really lifts me up is just this whole network of school strikers that I have, because, you know, I think with like so many of us working towards making change, you know, me and a few other young people are doing this court case, but there's so many more other exciting things going on in school strike that there's no way we can lose, you know. That's just my attitude. Like, we're all working towards something so big and we all have so much passion, you know, just to see justice, not just for the environment, but for all marginalized people, you know, every case of social injustice in the world. That's what really makes me feel hopeful.
I haven't heard that sentiment for a long time. There's no way we can lose on climate change. This case is in the federal court all this week, but it could be some months before we get a decision. To find out what happens, you can follow our coverage at theguardian.com. Plus, Adam has written a piece about this case and others like it, which we've linked on the full story page. That's it for today. Thanks to Adam Morton for his time. This episode was produced by Natasha May, Miles Herbert, and Joe Koning. Our executive producers are Miles Martignoni and Gabrielle Jackson. If you liked this episode, don't forget to leave a rating or a review. Okay, catch you tomorrow.